Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
My name is Gabe Diaz, and I'm the founder of Medalist Talent Group. And we're a boutique retained search firm that works with modern tech companies, help them fill director level to C-suite positions, as well as key strategic IC hires.
Gabe, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Super excited about this conversation that you and I had planned out. Before we dive in and talk about all the great things you're building currently, give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Sure. So born and raised in South Florida, currently reside in Miami Beach, coming up on 14 years in recruiting talent acquisition. Started out working with a tech recruiting firm called Tech Systems. Many people know them. They're a leading IT recruiting and services company. Spent about 3 years there, really doing recruiting and sales in South Florida. Eventually went in-house and worked for a large educational company called Kaplan Inc. They're a global organization. And they were actually one of the top technology, employers in South Florida. And so came in as a senior recruiter in-house, really focused a lot on technology, but supported a variety of different, departments. And then eventually took over and led the recruiting team there. In 2015, I had the opportunity to work remotely for a pre-IPO Silicon Valley tech company called Pivotal Software. They were backed by EMC, VMware, GE, eventually Ford and Microsoft. And they were a cloud native development platform, big data, modern data company, and a kind of an innovative development consulting arm. And it was a once in a lifetime opportunity. So I ventured over there and I held, kind of many hats, but predominantly recruited leadership and strategic roles across the world, focused on R&D and go to market. So Pivotal actually went public in 2018, and then in 2019, VMware actually acquired us. And so stuck around there for about 2 years post-IPO, focused again on leadership hiring for the modern applications business unit, their Tanzu portfolio. So this is VMware's kind of venture into the modern application space. So I did that, focused on R&D recruiting, and eventually led the recruiting team there for the Tanzu R&D recruiting team. And then in November of 2021, I decided to kind of venture out and do the entrepreneurial thing. I decided to found a boutique retained search firm called Medalist Talent Group. And we focus on working with cloud native, SaaS, data, and modern tech companies, recruit director to C-level positions, as well as key strategic hires. So that's kind of the, hope that was okay.
That was super cool. Thanks for sharing that. So having spent quite a few years and even earlier in your career in talent acquisition and recruitment and staffing, what are the different trends in this particular space that really excite you these days? What are you researching? What are you personally very passionate about in terms of what's coming next?
Yeah. So, it's interesting. I was thinking about this, I don't know if it's anything I'm really researching at the moment, but some of the trends that I see, or a trend that I'm seeing that's exciting, is just the investment in talent acquisition. Companies typically didn't invest heavily in this in the past. It was somewhat of an afterthought or a path to a career track in HR. And so, even when I went in, you normally would start off as a contractor and eventually get converted permanent and so on. So it really wasn't an emphasis by companies, but I think with the pendulum swinging from being an employer market to a candidate-driven market, you're really starting to see companies, put a lot of money into this, bringing on recruiters perm from day one, bringing on recruiters that know how to recruit passive talent, not just what's coming in organically through applications. Compensation is increasing, so you're really starting to see, just a huge investment in this area, and then also a separation of duties. So when I started in the in-house side, we did pretty much everything. We would, meet with the hiring managers. We'd post the positions. We'd recruit. We'd onboard the candidates, do their new hire paperwork. In some cases, we'd deliver their new hire orientation. And now you're starting to see this kind of separation of duties. You've got recruiters that purely focus on stakeholder management, candidate management, and driving candidates through a process. You've got recruiters that are purely focused on top of the funnel, candidate generation, they call it talent discovery or sourcing. And then you have a, you know, a whole recruiting operations arm that's responsible for making sure they have a really good onboarding experience, all the paperwork's done, et cetera. So this is, you know, this helps organizations scale, but it's really nice to see this kind of this paradigm shift, I guess you could say, and giving a career path to talent acquisition beyond just the agency route in some cases.
Yeah, absolutely. You can definitely relate on so many levels with everything, especially going on in the current market conditions where we see the industries are shifting towards to, which brings me to a further question I wanted to discuss with you in terms of the companies that you currently partner with to help bring on. You've mentioned you focus a lot on the leadership roles, strategic roles, and things like that. When it comes to onboarding the candidates, especially in leadership roles and in fully virtual environments, or maybe hybrid environments, that adds another layer of complexity. What are some of the recommendations or practical recommendations maybe that you share with some of your clients on how to improve this space, how to basically, you know, create that onboarding experience that really matters?
That's a good question. I think first and foremost, having a plan, right? Like actually designing like what does success look like in the first 30, 60, 90 days, establishing clear outcomes. And then, you know, putting people together with a buddy or somebody that they can kind of, they can rely on that could help them, you know, when they run into roadblocks or problems. So I'd say, and I think that this applies, you know, virtually, not virtually, et cetera. I mean, anytime somebody starts a new job, whatever level it is, you know, it's can be a nerve-wracking experience. You're coming from a place where you knew how to do everything to now you don't know how to do anything. Imposter syndrome sometimes sets in, et cetera. So I think, you know, having a plan is important. You know, assigning somebody that they can call and they can ask questions and they're not going to feel embarrassed or whatnot. And then setting realistic milestones as to what success looks like. I also see that, you know, companies are very eager to bring somebody on and have them impact right away, right? And that can put a lot of kind of unnecessary pressure, you know, on folks, like allow people to kind of get acclimated. And I think, you know, you set the foundation right on the front end and it'll pay dividends long-term.
When it comes to interviewing, it's also another area that's very complicated. And I've been on all sides of the equation as a candidate, as a hiring manager, also on the staffing side. So I've seen all different spectrums of that. And I've noticed with a lot of, or, you know, through that past experience, to summarize that as in one of my favorite books, The Hard Thing About the Hard Things, Ben Horowitz talks a lot about, you know, there's too much emphasis on what are the weaknesses that we can tolerate in that particular candidate versus what are the strengths that are missing on our team and can that candidate fill that void? What are your thoughts on just improving the space of interviewing? What are some of the recommendations that you provide to your candidates and also to your hiring managers?
Yeah. Again, I think having a plan, right? I think sometimes we go in and we know we need to hire, but we don't really kind of set the foundation in terms of like, okay, what are the outcomes that we're looking for this person to achieve? And then let's build an interview around those outcomes so that we're evaluating for that versus, you know, arbitrary, you know, experience or personality traits or things of that nature. So I think it's really important to have a plan, you know, whoever you're going to have on the interview panel, you know, make sure that they really need to be there. Don't have them interview with people for the sake of interviewing, right? Hey, I just want another set of eyes on this or so on and so forth. Try to streamline it as much as possible. Interview based on outcomes and be very intentional with every interview. So, you know, it's tough because everybody's very busy, and especially when you're hiring for scale and things like that, you know, having a meeting every single time before, you know, with an interview team, especially at the higher levels, you're talking about VPs and, you know, very, very busy people. How do you get them on the same page and how do you get a meeting every single time? But if you can carve out that time, even if it's 20 minutes, just to get together and, you know, get on the same page on what everybody's focused on, I think that will really help things out. So plan, streamline, interview based on outcomes, be prescriptive. And then on the candidate side, it's okay to prep the candidate with respect to like what they should expect, you know, to do on the interview, right? I think sometimes when candidates walk in completely, you know, unaware of what the interview process is going to look like, they're not going to be able to show up their best either. So you don't have to give them the answers to the test, but it's more about setting expectations. Who are you going to meet with, for how long, what's going to be the context, you know, maybe, you know, provide them the LinkedIn profile of the individual so they can kind of do some research, you know, make it easier for them, especially in this market right now where everyone's passive. They're like, they're not going to have time in many cases to sit there and do this, all this due diligence and prepare. So if you can make it easier for them, they'll show up much better.
Right. Absolutely. And at the end of the day, it's also creating that two-way street between the hiring manager and the candidate so that they get an opportunity to also interview the hiring manager as well and make an assessment. Is this the right culture for me? Is this the right type of leader that I can thrive under? So a lot of those things definitely matters and, you know, resonates on so many levels with what you're talking about. So that makes perfect sense. When in terms of the company that you're currently building, what is the opportunity that you saw in the market that's made you so excited about kind of venturing out on your own and looking to kind of to fill that void? Because it's a highly competitive space, but at the same time, it's very underserved. So I'm curious to get your thoughts on that process that you went through.
Yeah, you know, I saw an opportunity as a, you know, as a hiring manager, a talent acquisition manager. You know, oftentimes, even if you have the people on your team that have the capabilities to do search and to do this, you know, the key strategic hiring, sometimes they don't have the bandwidth to do it. Just, you know, that's just the reality of things. And so then you really need to look at, okay, what are my other options? Who can I partner with? And I really, there wasn't really that many, you know, companies out there that I felt could offer the level of service, the type of service that, you know, that I would want to offer to a client, right? To work on the hard to fill strategic positions. And so for me, that was really one of the key things. I've always wanted to do something entrepreneurial. And then there was opportunities that had started to kind of come my way where, you know, all those things made sense. So I saw that there was a void here, especially at like this director level and above, and some of these very senior strategic key hires. And so, yeah, I thought about it long and hard. And, you know, I spent, you know, 2 years post acquisition. And I just decided to run with it. And so far, it's been going well.
That's super exciting, man. So what's next? What are some of the short term plans or longer term? Where do you see this company going?
Well, the company is brand new. I mean, I just started it, right? You know, I left in November, really kind of got things going at the beginning of the year. So, you know, I'm everything right now. I'm the, you know, I'm the marketing department, I'm the finance department, I'm the legal department. I think for me, it's really just establishing a good base of customers. You know, the goal for my company isn't to be a kind of a world conqueror, if you will, or anything like that. We're not trying to be the biggest company in the world, but want to work with really interesting companies with really smart people that need the help, that I can partner with and be an extension of their team. So I think it's continuing to build relationships and find those companies that really could use my services and hopefully kind of lock arms and establish a long-term partnership. And so that's now, you know, as that starts to come in, yeah, it'd be great to start to scale the business and bring on, you know, other individuals that can kind of take on some of these responsibilities that I have, whether it's on the delivery side, whether it's on the business development side, or even some of the business operations functions. That would be great. But for now, it's just, you know, kind of getting things off the ground and getting the, you know, business in the door.
Yeah, no doubt. That's super exciting, man. Thanks for sharing that. In terms of your personal content diets, what do you consume on a daily basis to keep yourself informed on all the things that are going on in your industry?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Like, I think LinkedIn has some pretty good algorithms because they keep serving me stuff up every time I log in that's like really relevant to what I want to do and what I'm into. So I usually kind of start my day with like Wall Street Journal, LinkedIn, you know, and then I'll probably bookmark some articles or things that sound interesting. But as a recruiter, we're very fortunate that we're always talking to people that are, you know, doing it, right? And you learn from the people that you're recruiting and that you're engaging with, asking questions and having discussions. It's not just grilling them and interviewing them, but it's really more, you know, building a relationship and having conversations. And so I think that's been my kind of content diet for the last 14 years, is really talking to the most interesting people that are working at the most interesting companies, and then telling me about what are some of the trends and what's going on and what's working. Hey, we're trying this at this company, or we tried this technology at that company, or this is why we like this and not that. So yeah, that's, I think for me and for people in talent acquisition, I'm sure they can attest to this. That is, you know, probably takes up a lot of their content diet. I don't have any books or any authors I'd say that are like top of mind. I'm a big golfer, so I think that that's not relevant to this, but I read a lot of stuff in the golf world. That's probably where
that makes perfect sense, man. And hence the reason for this podcast as well. For me, a great source of learning, great source of information is talking to, you know, people, interesting folks on daily basis, you know, so conversations like this definitely it resonates to what you're talking about. In terms of mentorship, what is maybe an advice or series of advice that you received early in your career that you still refer to even these days and that you used to pass on to those that you, whom you mentor?
Yeah. It's interesting. I remember when I first kind of got into the world, you know, the corporate world, and I was, you know, really fiery and wanted to like move up the corporate ladder. And, you know, I was really eager to kind of give my opinion. And when I saw something, just like kind of interject. And, you know, somebody that I worked with early on, you know, at Tech Systems, they had a culture there of they called it carefrontation, where, you know, anybody at any level can kind of come to you and talk to you and tell you, give you some feedback. And this person brought me into a room, and I was probably 23, 24 years old at the time. And he's like, hey, you have some really great ideas, but you're going about this the wrong way. When you come in, really seek to understand and listen and learn first, you know, and try to understand the, you know, why things are the way they are before you kind of interject and give your opinion. And that's kind of resonated with me until this day. So even when I took over a team, whether it's kind of leading a team, you know, and let's just say if the team's doing well, doing not well, whatever it is, you know, before making any assumptions or, you know, interjecting my opinions, it's seek to understand. So I think for me, that was like a huge learning thing. I was very fortunate to experience early on in my career.
That's super cool, Gabe. And thank you for sharing that. And just overall, can't thank you enough for your time today. It was very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with all the guests on the podcast is do a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit the conversation from a year ago and see if everything that we've discussed still makes sense and still applies. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
All right. Thanks a lot, John. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.